It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's time once again for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to have out there in the world two people, Zaz Hollander calling in from the Palmer Fishhook. Welcome, Zaz.
Good to be here, Mike. Hello, Philip.
And Philip Manning calling in from Talkeetna.
Pleasure to be here.
There's so many things. This has been a fascinating past week. I was going to go topically from small to big, then I realized that many people's big are other people's small and vice versa. But let's start with things that affect people's lives. And I'm very curious about what's happening, starting up there in Talkeetna, with any sign of flooding, winds, fire, anything that of that sort that's happening in your area, Philip?
So far, so good. I know as we're recording this on Friday, a little bit further south of here, there's some significant wind issues, but it's pretty calm here, and we've gotten some rain, but no signs of flooding just yet. Things are starting to really green up here in Talkeetna.
And now, how does this fit with previous years when the river has tended to flood a little bit?
Well, the ice went out on the river early this year, as is kind of to be expected with as warm as March was. In fact, I think we tied the record for the earliest breakup on the Susitna River, according to the Alaska Pacific River Forecast Center. So, the ice went out. There was no real jams anywhere that caused any issues. It was a pretty gentle breakup in that regard this year. It's been a while since we've had real issues during breakup in this area.
Okay. Now, Zaz, I know you've addressed one particular aspect of disaster, and that's fire. How about a quick summary of what's happening at a major fire that's a bit to the north?
Well, as of a few days ago and yesterday, cooler conditions had kind of laid down. This is a wildland fire near Delta Junction that's burning on military testing land.
Right.
And there's a bunch of unexploded bombs and whatnot out there. And so on top of the usual, military land fires, if there's no infrastructure threatened, are usually considered a limited suppression area. They don't want to, spend a ton of money and potentially risk lives fighting fire that is burning there. But this fire is complicated by the unexploded ordnance in the area. That fire was at, a little over 5,000 acres yesterday. But they were watching the same windstorm that we're all watching here Friday morning that's expected to bring some really significant winds, especially right now to Anchorage. Higher winds are being forecast in the bowl than usual. I think the gusts maybe up to 60 in the forecast. So people are kind of watching warily as that early summer storm comes in.
Okay. So let's turn to logging, both commercial and what I term private. I bring this up because yesterday I picked up some spruce-killed spruce chunks that will feed our fires into the future. And I know that many people have, around their property, spruce, other trees that have been damaged one way or the other. Is there any indication of anything more about logging in general, particularly up toward Talkeetna? Or the cutting of those spruce for private use, et cetera? Go ahead.
There have definitely been a lot of trees that have been felled, like you said, especially on private land. Last year there was a lot of discussion about logging out along Petersville Road. I haven't heard anything recent on that. The one recent thing that did come up is potential for changes to the way the borough handles its natural resource management units. With regard to allowing for the cutting of more trees and expanding the allowable cut potentially. And there's some concern about that because, while on the one hand I think everybody is kind of in favor of getting the beetle kill handled as quickly as possible, there's some concern that it could also open up to more widespread logging maybe of trees that are not subject to the beetle kill, but that, public entities might not have the funding at this point to try to take down.
Okay. Now, one of the other aspects of life, particularly in summer, that has been affected in a variety of ways is the ability to camp. And Zaz, you did a very interesting article about a new private campground on the Knik River, which is a recreation area that has had a lot of focus of attention. How about a quick summary of what's going on there?
Yeah, that's a new private campground that had kind of a soft opening last weekend. And this is on the Knik River on private land that is on kind of where the river and Old Glenn Highway Bridge come together. As you're coming from Butte, it's on the right side. And so this is right up against the Knik River Public Use Area, which is a 265,000-acre DNR-managed property. But this is privately owned, and until last year was not managed as a campground in any way or really closely managed as residential property. But now there is a guy who's been living on the property, and he's got horses, and he's been seeing you know, what we've all seen in Butte and in other outlying areas of the borough for years, and, you know, unauthorized camping, trash dumping, but also illegal shooting, you know, drug use, paraphernalia, squatting, human waste. And so what this guy decided to do was to open a private campground and kind of police the area, although he's the first to say that, you know, he's got two camp hosts living there, and no, they're not armed. And if he needs to get to the point where he's going to arm his camp hosts, then he will remove his campground because it's just not worth the trouble. I personally don't think he's going to get to that point. But the people who live down there are relieved to have, you know, a presence. There isn't the money in the budget for a law enforcement presence. You know, the troopers can't be down there all the time. It's sort of far removed. It's on the fringe of the trooper APD margins. And the DNR has, you know, some law enforcement funding, but not a ton. And so, you know, people who live down there, I think, are mostly leaning towards celebrating this campground. But there are people who have been using that area legitimately for a long time who now feel as if, you know, their what they thought was public access land is being threatened by this campground.
Philip, up in the Talkeetna area, are there similar issues, and how has that been handled by either private or other campgrounds?
Well, so, I mean, we do have some private campgrounds up here over in East Talkeetna. There's a campground over by the boat launch, and then we have an RV campground. But there's a lot of, and then the borough itself has a campground down near the end of Main Street here in Talkeetna, and there's a few other private ones over near Montana Creek, that sort of thing. But there's quite a bit of unregulated camping that happens, especially around the big holidays, Memorial Day, 4th of July, that sort of thing. And a few years ago, I did a story where walked down further down Montana Creek, and just to see the number of people who were out there, and, you know, you had side-by-sides and four-wheelers running through, you know, riparian habitat and all this sort of stuff. And I mean, the truth of the matter is that there's not really a good way for it to be handled locally, and you know, for the state to have the resources to try to deal with it. You know, maybe you've got a wildlife trooper up here for fishing and that sort of thing, but there's not a whole lot of supervision that happens. And yeah, you do hear a lot of gunshots along the various creeks, and there is a human waste issue that happens alongside that as well.
Okay. Well, there's a very interesting thing that has happened. It happened a year ago, and it's repeating next Sunday, a week from Sunday, on May 19th. And that is a graffiti cleanup on the old Matsu River Bridge. If you're going from Palmer and you head across the Matanuska River and heading toward the Butte, there's the old bridge that remains there. And last year, it was graffiti and trash pickup that was done by an ad hoc group. That's going to happen again. In fact, they formed a group that has a Facebook page, and they intend to do that good work. They have the support of a gentleman who lives across from the pullout area along the river there, spoke to the borough assembly. He's been in touch with the city of Palmer. And there seems to be a generalized support for it as an informal way for people to clean up an area which seems to attract trash and certainly graffiti. Do you have anything of that sort happening in Talkeetna? And what's the status of graffiti art in the Talkeetna area?
There's not a ton of it, and there's not an organized effort that I'm aware of to try to deal with it. You know, we have things that come to mind. We have the railroad trestle bridge, and that's got some graffiti under there. But I don't know how much new stuff gets added to that. And then, you know, picnic tables in the village park, that sort of thing. You'll have people carving or, you know, drawing on them or what have you. But it's not a widespread issue. As far as organized efforts, for the past few years now, there's been a volunteer-based effort to do cleanups along the spur road, the Talkeetna Spur.
Right.
And I haven't heard of one happening this year, but it's happened for the last couple of years. And from all accounts, they've gotten quite a bit of volunteer support as well as some financial support from local businesses to, you know, help pay for refreshments and gloves, equipment, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, let's turn to roads and, in particular, road delays. We've spoken in the past about what's happening in Palmer. Glen Highway running through the city is in the process of being upgraded significantly. And what I'm aware of is that the DOT is putting a lot of effort into making sure people have some way to get across the highway and go from one place to the other. And even to the point of when, for example, the Alaska State Fair happens, they plan to shut down their active operations to allow traffic to flow. Are there proposed or upcoming or presently happening road construction and delays in the Talkeetna area?
Well, last year was a big year for that because the Parks Highway got widened out near the near what we call the Y, the junction of the Parks Highway and the Talkeetna Spur Road. There was a turn lane added there, and as well as extension to the walking path out toward the high school, and an underpass through that area has been part of that project for a while. That slowed things down a lot last summer. But that the highway part is done, and so there's not nearly as much delay heading south out of Talkeetna as there has been in the past. I haven't gone north myself recently, so I don't know how significant projects that direction are. I know that they've been kind of working their way north and then started working their way south with a lot of that road construction. But the stuff near the Y has, by and large, been completed. And it's really nice having a turn lane there, I'll tell you.
Oh, yes. When we drove up, I appreciated it. In terms of traffic in Talkeetna, I know you get a lot of visitors during the summer. Has that begun to be noticeable, or does it begin around Memorial Day?
It's going to start in the next couple of weeks. The real uptick in traffic comes when we start getting the buses coming in. And the big lodges, the Talkeetna Alaskan Lodge, and then the Princess Wilderness Lodge, about an hour up the road, they're not in full operation just yet. And so we do get a fair bit of independent travelers and some climbers coming in, but a lot of the climbers who come in are coming in on shuttles and that sort of thing. So that doesn't add a ton to the traffic in the area, but within the next week or two, we're expecting to see that really start to ramp up.
Okay.
You know, to jump in here, sorry.
Go ahead.
I don't live in Talkeetna, but you know, spending, we were, you know, in Willow, a month ago maybe, and it was one of the first really nice days of spring. And we went out to Talkeetna, and it was like a summer day, Philip. It was Alaskan. People probably came up from Anchorage.
Yeah.
And it was packed. Town was packed.
Yeah, I think I remember that it was about 2 weeks ago.
I think so.
Yeah, because I do remember a weekend where out of nowhere, there were motorcycles everywhere, people probably getting their motorcycles out for the first time for the year. And, there was quite a bit of activity around town, kind of out of nowhere. And then during the week, it sort of returned to the normal spring, you know, somewhat lull. But, yeah, there was a couple of weekends there where it got really busy as people kind of had their last hurrah before the tourists arrived.
Exactly.
Well, let's turn now to the budget topic. By the time we meet again at the next Valley Edition, the legislature will have completed its normal 120-some-odd days and will be poised to either go into special session or the agreements that have been made by the legislature and presented to the governor will be approved and we'll have a budget and life will go on. But I thought I'd reference one thing that stuck out for me in this past week in terms of all of the different testimony that was provided by the gavel service. And that was Vic Fisher's hour-long testimony to the House State Affairs Committee It was covered very well in the media, and it's still available in the archives on Gavel to Gavel. And the reason why I highlight it is because Vic Fisher is 95 years old. He is the last surviving member of the Alaska Constitutional Convention, and he is quite able to describe events at that time and through the years. He had served in the Senate, et cetera. And he had a message that he presented to the committee to be passed on to legislators. And the major focus was that the legislature is pretty much the premier body in the government. And when it comes to things like constitutional changes, it's the legislature that presents those, in his opinion, and I think bolstered by the reality, presents those changes to the citizenry for voting. And I thought that was a kind of refreshing time, an opportunity to hear from someone who had the details and could share them. I've had the pleasure of having conversation, interviewing Vic over the years, and I'm wondering, the two of you, Philip, Zaz, have you been able to also have contact with one of our founding fathers, so to speak?
I met Vic Fisher some time ago.
Okay.
I have not.
So what I would do, what I'm going to encourage is he is quite a personable individual, he and his wife, Jane Anvik. And I'm sure that he's well known for driving in the past. There are many photos of him driving a Ford Mustang, a red Ford Mustang convertible. I've seen him in the past in that vehicle in Anchorage. He's no longer in possession of it, but they do get around and about. And Philip, I'm just going to encourage you to invite them up to Talkeetna and have an opportunity to get some firsthand accounts of life as it was at the beginning of the state. I'll just throw that out to you.
All right.
Legislatures have been appearing locally one way or the other to share what's happening. Philip, up there in Talkeetna, has the senator or representative appeared to share the process being played out in Juneau?
Not this far north that I've heard about. Yeah, we haven't gotten any word of any town halls or anything in this area recently. I want to say Senator Schauer was up here earlier in the session, but nothing recently.
Okay. Well, the big news, and it's big because of the numbers, because what's being thrown around are variations on the theme of how many billions of dollars will be transferred from one account into the corpus of the permanent fund in a way to keep it out of the hands of future legislators. And the numbers range from $12 billion to $8 billion. And the thing about that is I'm reading these numbers and I'm saying, $1 billion is a lot of money. And when we start talking about, well, the little number before it, 12 or 11 or 9 or 8, it seems like, well, that's not a lot, but it's a huge amount of money. But the major thrust of all of this, and it seems to have purchase in both the Senate and the House, is to say, if we put this money into the corpus, then we will not be tempted to spend it, and we will be forced finally to deal with how to do a budget that has a variety of income sources. Any comment about that, Philip, or thoughts that people might have in Talkeetna?
Yeah, well, I think that gets a little noodly for a lot of folks to try to wrap their brains around in a lot of ways. I mean, there are definitely a fair few folks who would like to see that money kept out of the hands of future legislatures. But, I mean, I've also heard some concern voiced that, okay, well, if we move this out of the earnings reserve and then we see a dip in oil prices, that there might be issues with the dividend itself in future years, which is the reason that the money is being transferred to the corpus in the first place. And so I think it's one of those things that once you get kind of down into the nitty-gritty, it's tricky to follow what the significance of those different transfers would be. Like you said, $8 billion versus $12 billion. once you get into the billions, I think it's beyond the ability for a lot of folks to even kind of fathom how that much money gets appropriated and spent.
Right. Okay. Well, I would like to finish up with something that appeared in the Anchorage Daily News, and I found it fascinating. This was in a section referred to as blunt talk. I'm going to mention it because it's kind of a an interesting look at what might be referred to as a environmentally appropriate way to grow cannabis. And it was based upon a guy's work up in Fairbanks who had for a long time had a farm called Rosie Creek Farm that was growing organic vegetables. And Amy Pettit in her show had the opportunity to interview him some time ago. And I see that he is continuing on. And the reason why I bring it up is because what he has attempted to do and is making progress is growing cannabis outdoors. And he points out that not only can he do this in a somewhat organic fashion, but what he's also doing is being environmentally correct, if you will, because he mentions that if you're going to grow cannabis indoors, the amount of energy required to do that is extraordinary. But if you just focus on the short growing season and do this outdoors, you have reduced the input costs significantly. And I was struck by the way in which this was presented. A lengthy article about his work in the ADN, but I also noted that at the bottom there was a statement that reads, "The story was produced by the Creative Services Department of the Anchorage Daily News, and the ADN newsroom was not involved in its production." Creative Services is I'm not sure what that really means. Zaz, can you help out at all?
It's sponsored content, so nothing I know anything about.
Okay, because you're in the newsroom. Right, exactly.
That's right.
Well, I appreciated that end piece, and the information in the writing was kind of significant. But once again, it raised for me the question of what is news, et cetera. Sponsored content always has that kind of sense of, I wonder what this is about. Philip, any comment?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's been a long discussion about the issue of sponsored content. I will say that from what I've seen, ADN does do a really good job of marking what is sponsored content.
So exactly.
You know what you're getting when you're looking at it. This is a hard news piece versus, you know, something that's sponsored, or, you know, even the editorial stuff, that stuff tends to be very well marked too. I mean, I think if that stuff's going to exist, which I don't know that we can realistically avoid it at this point for a lot of publications, then it should be marked appropriately, and I think ADN is doing a good job of that.
Okay. So
I have to say that, I'm sorry, Mike, to interrupt.
Go ahead,
you, but
go for it.
In non-sponsored content, we did cover an outdoor grow in Willow that really struggled because of odor issues.
Right. I was going to bring that up, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, that leads into also the question, Philip, is there outdoor growing of cannabis in the Talkeetna area, or Zaz still in the Willow area?
I'm sure there's plenty of marijuana growing outdoors in the Talkeetna area. How much of it is under license, I do not know at this time. I know the majority of operations that I know of in the Talkeetna area are indoors.
Okay. And Zaz?
Philip's covered the bases there. I think that the next phase will be hemp.
Exactly.
And maybe not the same growers, and there may be some crossover, but growing hemp indoors versus out.
Right. We had the opportunity to interview a couple of different people around the progress being made for hemp production by commercial farmers, for example. And as best I know at the moment, the issue remains with the division of agriculture, where people are working as fast as they can to develop all of the regulations that would allow the commercial production, the testing commercial production of hemp, which people have been looking forward to for some time. Well, folks, I think we've covered almost everything that I can think of. Philip, is there any last issue that you'd like to bring up before we finish?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, and maybe this will be a topic for next week too, but once the state budget gets done, I think eyes are going to start to shift to the borough budget. At the budget meeting in Willow, there were a couple of interesting things that happened. The assembly reappropriated some funding that was already in the land management fund to finish the restoration of the old community hall in Willow, the old log cabin there. So folks there were really excited about that. And then there was a resolution to basically of non-objection to Trapper Creek starting its own purely volunteer fire department as a 501c3.
Oh, wow.
And what Ken Barkley, the acting director of emergency services, said at that meeting is that it's basically Trapper Creek's only option at this point, because having a fire service area up there would cost in the neighborhood of 29 mils. And I double-checked that to make sure there wasn't a move decimal somewhere, and apparently not. Apparently that is really what it would cost. So the folks in Trapper Creek are organizing to try to get that going now.
Well, very good. Zaz?
I guess batten down the hatches. By later today, our future selves will know how many power outages we're starting to see storm. So I hope everybody does okay.
All right. Well, I want to thank Zaz Hollander and Philip Manning for both calling in today for this edition of Valley Edition. And we'll be back next week for yet another one. Have a good weekend.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.